we take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Good evening and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
And tonight we are looking at the seventh episode of the eighth series of the new Doctor Who, or the first series of the newish new Doctor Who, the 12th Doctor, Peter Capaldi, the episode Kill the Moon. Kill the Moon.
We're not playing hearts. It's not Shoot the Moon.
Oh, yes. All right. All right. Well, in a way. So, summary. Courtney, who we were introduced to last time, is now apparently an even bigger problem child because the doctor has told her she's insignificant. Clara wants the doctor to tell her she's special. Instead, the doctor decides to make her special. The first woman on the moon. Instead, they land on a space shuttle that's crashing on the moon. Yeah, near enough. The shuttle is there to investigate mysterious problems that are being caused by the moon. They have nuclear weapons to do something. Though it's not entirely clear what they're for. They soon discover the moon has been infested by nasty spider-like creatures, and then the doctor discovers the moon's greatest secret, and it's decision time for the human race. And the doctor decides to leave them to it. So what did you think of this?
I'm more curious as to what you thought of it. Because I've seen your notes. Holy cow, you wrote a tome.
I did. I did write a tome, and I'll tell you, in basic terms, I really enjoyed it.
In basic terms, so did I.
I really enjoyed it, but I'll tell
you. I like this one a lot. I've got one huge gripe with it, but that was not enough for me to dislike the episode. On the whole, I thought it was really good.
Yeah, you know, I watched through and was, you know, I enjoyed it. The suspense, the story, there was enough action, there was some stuff. I mean, yes, I had a gripe, and I suspect I can guess where both of our gripes probably lie. But, you know, it had tension, it was science fiction-y. I mean, it was good. I really did enjoy the story.
I found it to be, in some ways, obviously, Doctor Who, in terms of the feel of the shows today, they don't resemble what we were growing up with Pertwee, Baker, and all that. However, I think the spirit of the episode really was a bit of a throwback.
Yeah.
And I say that in the greatest of ways. It was a fantastic story.
Yeah, and this is a new writer for Doctor Who. Whose name I didn't write down. I think it's Peter Parker or something like that.
Oh, Spider-Man. Cool.
Now, that's probably why I thought of it. I don't actually have it here in front of me, and I meant
Neither
to.
Neither do I. I forgot to write it down.
Peter Harness?
I think that sounds about right, yeah.
Something like that. He's not done any Doctor Who before, so he's entirely new to it. And I'll tell you, Ben is correct. I have domes of notes because there were things. There was one thing that kept running through this story that I didn't like exactly. It didn't take away my enjoyment from the story, but it kept popping me out of the story. And that was like he had the little, I don't know anything about science stick, and I'm going to poke the audience with it every about 45 seconds with my ignorance of basic science over and over again. And the second viewing, it was much worse for me. I still enjoyed it. I still liked it. I was actually able to understand it some the second time because I knew which points to put my head near the speaker so I could actually understand what they were saying. So,
but yes, there were moments that I couldn't understand what they were saying, and it was through the second viewing that details became a bit clear. But please go on.
And upon occasion, every once in a while, when the details came clear, it didn't help. Like, for example, why is she flying? Because they're all moving about. Sorry. Okay. What? Okay.
Well,
that made it perfectly clear.
I found that was one that had me a bit perplexed too. I mean, whether it is the individual bacteria spider-like creatures all moving, or if it's the big secret in the moon that's moving, that should not be enough to all of a sudden change the gravity situation. And notice that the doctor throws his yo-yo, and it's the moment she grabs onto it that the gravity came back on. I went, nah, sorry.
Yeah.
That one isn't working. You know, I'm sorry, buddy, that it may look great on the screen, but if you're trying to pass this off as a gravity issue, that didn't work.
Yeah, so I mean that was really the thing. I have, as Ben says, I have reams of notes here, and I'm going to start kind of working my way down through them. I don't want this to sound like a picking. That's why I wanted to put my two cents out there. It says I really enjoyed the episode, but it was just like he was flicking my nose almost at times. And so this is the thing. Sometimes that's okay in science fiction. Sometimes it is appropriate, and I'll give you two examples, one good and one really awful. In Space 1999, which we haven't talked about yet, but we will. But in general terms, one of the criticisms leveled at Space 1999 is that they got their science so badly wrong. And in many respects, that's so obviously true. But in many respects, they were trying to do something, I think, at least in the first year of Space 1999, where they were trying to, without explicitly stating it, but they did in tangential terms, it's like things aren't working the way that they understand things will work, and that there is something bigger and grander and more expansive for them to learn and experience and become part of in the universe. And so whenever they would throw this sort of like, yeah, that couldn't have happened, they were also throwing something like, yes, but it did happen. How do we reinterpret that? And I don't know that Space 1999 was particularly successful at it, but I'm absolutely positive that that was in the mind of some of the writers when they were doing it, because it was the grand mystery of space.
So it sounds like they were trying to be philosophical about some of these scientific contradictions that we were being presented with.
Exactly. And then the poorer example is the book that I wrote has incredibly bad science, and it intentionally has incredibly bad science. That is, there is the wink to the audience that says this is parody, but also there is that, but it's legitimately wrong. To tell the story, it has to be legitimately wrong science. These people have to be going in and going, well, that can't possibly happen that way. And so there are times when I will accept science fiction that is not accurate if that's what it needs to tell the story, because it is a fictional story and it doesn't have to be hard science fiction to be entertaining. I mean, for crying out loud, I enjoyed Buck Rogers in the 25th century. Not saying it was great, but, you can enjoy it for the melodrama that it is and not have it. But I don't think that was what was going on in this story. And yet, at the same time, there was an awful lot of stuff being thrown around that sounded like it was meant to be factual, and yet just was utterly nonsensical.
Well, I gave a lot of this a hand wave only because, look back to Classic Who. Granted, they were not trying to be science fiction like it is today, but being that I was getting caught up in the spirit of the Classic Who that we grew up with, I found myself being very forgiving.
Okay, so
towards a lot of that.
I'll give you an example. The spiders. They make no sense, okay? They're casting webs out on the planet. We know what spiders are. These are spiders with big teeth, which obviously would indicate that they have in some carnivorous or some eating nature to them. They cast webs, which is what we associate spiders with trapping. The Doctor even talks about how they're hunting by motion. And yet, all of that is fine. It makes no sense to have them on the moon, but what the heck? It was fun, right? I like
right.
that. But then we go on and say it's actually a single-celled organism.
Very large single-celled organism.
No, there is no way that is anything but a multicellular organism. Why did they need that line in there, which makes it bad?
It didn't need to be there.
I could ignore it until he says it's a single-cellular organism. Like, well, no, wait a minute now. What does it eat, and why does it need legs to crawl, and what does it cast webs? And it's like all of a sudden, it was just like you threw in that one piece of detail that you shouldn't have thrown in. You should have just ignored it and let there be spiders on the moon. But they didn't do that.
Well, if he wanted to explain something, all he has to do is look at there's a lot of natural life on the Earth, both on land and at sea, where you have the large animal that is that has a lot of smaller animals that travel along with it. In some cases, I mean, they live in a symbiotic relationship. And he could have gone down that angle. Instead, it would have been infinitely more believable instead of trying to come up with this idea that these were single-celled creatures. Because to be honest, when that line was introduced, that did take something out of the story for me, because strangely enough, the spider ceased to be scary for me I mean, I admit I have a terrible fear of spiders. And in the first part of the story, and we were kind of getting this alien-esque kind of feel to it. And I was enjoying that. It was really nice to be caught up in this suspense about this really nasty monster, if you will, that is killing astronauts. It was fun to watch. I enjoyed it. But the moment the doctor gave the explanation, compliments of our story writer, I ceased to be scared.
Yes.
And I was kind of disappointed in that.
Okay, here's another one. Okay, you've got a germicide in a spray bottle, which inexplicably Courtney brought along with her in her spacesuit. In her spacesuit, was it in the pressurized area? Because later on they try to spray it on the surface, and they give us a little sciency wave that says, oh, zero, we're in vacuum, you can't
use a spray bottle. It should have exploded, I know.
Or sublimated into space, or...
Yeah. It shouldn't have existed. Yeah, it should not have been able to work.
It's like, now you're going to try to get science-y on me? You've completely and utterly blown it all the way out here with the bottle, but now you're going to get science-y? It was just weird. And there were, you know, instances on instances of instances. The moon has gained 1.3 billion tons. Wouldn't make a squat of difference to the gravity, even if we were using kilograms, which of course you would, which are measures of mass, as
right.
opposed to 10. But the moon, and I did the conversions, the moon is 81 billion tons as our own estimates, and so it's added 1.3 billion tons, or, you know, less than about 10%, would not have increased
the gravity,
2/3 to Earth normal gravity,
which means he clearly did not do his research. This guy's not a scientist. I mean, or he doesn't follow science. I'm not even sure. I mean, I'd be fascinated to find out how he got contracted or how his story got sold to Doctor Who. It might have been intended for something completely different and not be very reliant on scientific accuracy. I mean, yeah, it is a science fiction. Yes, this is a science fiction. But at the same time, you do need to have some level of scientific accuracy so that you can suspend disbelief.
Or you have to wave it away. Another one. The moon has been the Earth's partner for 100 million years. Well, now, I don't know what it'd take for that one. Since about 1984, the prevailing theory is that the moon is the result of a planetoid collision between the Earth, proto-Earth, and something about the size of Mars, because the moon and the Earth are roughly the same exact composition of materials, and the angular momentum of our system tells us that it's probably some sort of collision was introduced into the forming mass. But that would be 4 to 4.6 billion years ago, not 100 million years ago. 100 million years ago was in the beginning of the late Cretaceous, which I suppose you could argue is the lunar event that caused the Silurians, or Homo reptilia. It is that. So were they trying to make the Homo reptilia story right there, or did he just not bother to look up remotely anything on the history of the moon? Because I mean, even
the latter.
Cursory Wikipedia search would have told you that the moon is at least 4 billion years old. So, da-da-da-da. It just was... Again and again and again. And, you know, I mean, obviously a non-American cannot grow up to be president of the United States either.
Right.
By the way, do you think that Courtney was the president of the United States in 2049?
That's a good question. No idea for sure.
Anyway. So when they were going to the moon, and the doctor arrives in the space shuttle, and he's bouncing around in the gravity, and they've just crashed, and the astronauts come in. Did it seem to you like they had no clue that gravity was the problem? I mean, they knew the moon was...
Not quite sure what you mean by that.
Okay, so the doctor is like bouncing around and saying, the problem here is, I can see it's the gravity. And they're saying, well, it can't be that. It's like, why did they think the moon was causing all the problems with the Earth if they didn't think the moon's gravity had increased?
Tides.
Okay, then
but they know something. They know that something is up with the moon. That's all they do know. At least that's what I got out of this. They were aware that something was affecting the tides.
That would be gravity. Yeah.
Right. So they went there, but they had no idea what the heck they were going to find.
What was their plan with those nuclear weapons?
Destroy the moon.
Okay. So later on, she suggests that if the eggshell cracks, all the pieces of the eggshell will come raining down on the Earth
like the dinosaurs. I know.
But if they're going to blow up the moon, how would that be?
How's that any better? It's worse.
Exactly. So I...
Yeah, what was the actual intent there? I mean, that was bizarre. I didn't understand what the heck they were trying to go with that one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was, I thought, here's one I thought interesting. The doctor says he doesn't know. He might regenerate forever when they talk about possibly shooting him, even though they didn't have any guns.
I think he was just being snarky.
I don't know. I actually don't know. I mean, we have no idea how much the Time Lords imparted to him.
That is true.
They may have given him the whole lot, thinking, well, we better have an ace in the hole for all eternity if we ever want to get back.
For a very long time.
Yeah. I mean, but the nice part of it is that we've effectively eliminated the 12 regeneration limit now.
Yeah.
We've taken it away. It's now an unknown number of times. The doctor might die at any regeneration, which I think is an excellent thing to happen, because then the doctor doesn't assume that he has to regenerate. He might actually die. You know, it's like the superpower. You know that if they shoot you, you're not going to die. But if you don't know that you're not going to die, maybe you should, you know, get out of the problem.
Right.
Well, he's never really done that. But nonetheless, it's...
I don't know. I kind of got the feeling he was just being really snarky. That's what I was getting out of it.
What did you think of his personality this time?
Cantankerous. He reminded me a bit of Hartnell. Again, with a nice dash of Colin.
See, now, I thought he was in... pretty good form, actually.
Let me add. I'm not saying that as a criticism. Much like he was in Time Heist, I thought he was in excellent form. He was in control, so to speak, of himself, and was doing his best to be on top of the situation instead of being the loon that we've had for many episodes of this first season so far, or this new season with Capaldi. I was very, very happy with what we saw in the doctor in this particular episode. I mean, there were some moments where I thought maybe he was being a bit harsh in some of the things that he was saying and some of the things that he was doing. But again, not too far out of character. If this doctor is supposed to be something of a revisitation of the, you know, of William Hartnell, or with some Colin Baker thrown in there for good measure, then his actions are totally believable in this story. Completely believable from, you know, from how he's talking to people to how he's arriving at a solution to a problem. All of it make perfect sense for me. I thought he was in excellent form.
There is a theme in this story that I do particularly like, and it may not be the main theme, but in a way it is the main theme. The year is 2049, and mankind has firmly got his eyeballs placed square on his own navel. He's not looking to the stars. He's retreated from space. He's found it to be wanting and not interesting and not anything but a harsh sentence of death, which I think many people feel now. I mean,
yeah,
I'm a strong advocate of the space program. I think we should be spending far, far more money than we do.
Absolutely.
Moving towards getting our rear ends off this planet. Whether or not that's because I grew up watching science fiction and that seems to be what the message is, or whether you work that out. But not everyone agrees with that. Some people who are very pro-science exploration believe that, you know, it's a waste of time to send people. Robotic probes do what we need to do. And then furthermore, there are people who think we should spend all that money on growing crops and feeding people and curing Ebola and also good things. I don't know that it's a zero-sum game. Perhaps maybe they could take some out of military instead, or something else instead of taking the money away from feeding poor people. But, you know, these are all a question of your priorities. But the thrill is gone, and the desire and the political will has been lost.
It's almost like the doctor was saying that the spark of curiosity had been extinguished.
Yes, mankind has stopped aspiring, and there is obviously a transformative moment in this story. And I pose here that it is, whether we'll see it or not, it is Courtney's transformative moment as well. Do we go back into Coal Hill School in two or three episodes and Courtney is now a student who is not the problem?
She sees the potential.
She sees her potential. She sees the potential of the future and is a changed person. I would dearly love to see that.
I would like to see that. I don't think we will, but I would like to see it.
I think that's the message you know, I would like to take from somebody going on a journey with a doctor is that they come back out of that, makes them a better person, makes them a person who has bigger horizons. And
well, and we have seen that. Maybe not necessarily. We have seen that a little bit in Doctor Who, even with the revisitation of Sarah Jane mm-hmm. and some of the adventures that she has gone on. And we in the Adventures of Sarah Jane, we see what happens with Joe Grant. And it's the same thing with her after she left the third Doctor.
Rose is with, too.
And Rose as well, yes, because she's
Martha
working for
as well.
Yeah, Martha works for UNIT, Rose works for Torchwood on the other side.
Only Donna, and that's not her fault.
No, because her memory was wiped. But and you're right, it's not her fault. Even Mickey
mm-hmm.
has grown. So
Amy
everybody,
and Rory.
Amy and Rory, so everybody who has had some kind of contact with the Doctor and worked with him, their horizons have been expanded. And I would very much like to see that happen with Courtney. I think there's an excellent story that should be told for certain obvious reasons.
Yeah. I just want to point that out. I think the writer was telling us that. I do. I you know, sometimes when you're watching a story, it's obvious that that the author is, particularly in science fiction, sometimes that they may beat you over the head or that may only come close to beating you over the head. But that's what I felt like when I was watching this story. I felt like this was, you know,
it was like the underlying theme.
Get on with it. It's time to turn that corner and go.
Yeah.
And if it hadn't been for the fact that he kept peppering the worst science in there, I would have felt he was far more sincere it. But that was so weird, that juggling act between, you know, hey, it's time, you've got to look to the stars and you've got to expand your horizons and stop being backwards and all that, and yet the most egregious of science mistakes in this story.
It is a bit of a paradox. Yes, I have to admit. Again, I'd really like to know what the history of this story is. How did he get pegged? Did this story go through any kind of rewrite? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of... I watched the Doctor Who extra on mm-hmm. this, and it was not very revealing about how this story came about.
No, the writer has done several other shows, and he has some affiliation with Mark Gatiss, so he may be part of the crowd. There was a lot of... I think he's a well-regarded writer, and again... Apart from the science-y bit, I really
thought... It's a good story.
It's a good story. And so, obviously, he is a good storyteller, and I'd like to see him do a bit more.
Not so science-y,
though. Maybe get
though.
Brian Cox to come in and give him a little bit on the physics, but...
you know, and he could hopefully pen a good story that doesn't necessarily have to hinge on so many scientific details.
You know, I'm not even going to complain about next week when they have a train through space.
neither will I. Hey, we had the Titanic in space. Why the heck not?
That's right. I'm still going to go with the whole, okay, the creature is born in orbit. Okay, that's good. The eggshell disappears. Well, thank goodness for that. Because that's what it does. And then when nobody was looking...
It lays another egg.
It lays another egg bigger than itself.
Yeah, I saw...
And again, that whole mass thing. It's like, where did the mass for that one? And if it's not massive enough as the old moon, then will the Earth's, you know, the gravity and the whole... I mean, it was just all... And of course, you could hear
it's
it...
horrible science.
You could hear it crying or moaning or whatever out there in space. And you're like... Yeah, no, that even I'm going to go with the, you know, it's cool when the spaceships go whoosh when they go by, but hearing the thing sound like a big space whale through millions of miles of vacuum, probably not going to be an acceptable.
Yeah, no, I couldn't. I mean, if I'm going to really look at this from a scientific point of view, yeah, I found that I could not actually accept this one. It was another one of the situations where I just had to give it a hand wave because, again, this was sort of, you know, hearkening back to, you know, the old familiar Who, which was really more about the fantasy, the science fantasy, as Tom Baker liked to call it. And this is just another one of those fantastical kind of story elements. And because I was caught up in that spirit, I was able to let it go.
I just thought it's cute that it was off camera. I mean...
I know. How convenient was that?
You couldn't have visualized it. I don't know how they could. How, anybody no, could I don't have think visualized could. It. I mean, this egg that's bigger than the baby comes out of the baby. It's like, you know something? Let's just have the camera on other people and have Courtney notice it in the background.
Yeah. Why not? Well, in some ways, in an artistic level, it kind of works because first you have the scene with no moon in the sky. Then all of a sudden, when the camera is turned and we go back, now we have the moon back in the sky. So I think, although seeing the egg get laid might have been a nice counterpoint to seeing the egg hatch, if you will. But still, there was just, I think you're right. I don't think there's any real way to properly visualize it. So they just went for the more artistic attempt, and if you want to call it that, and just, you know, moon not there one moment, moon there the next, and let's just move on.
Let's just wave some hands and go. It's like,
yeah.
Let's see. Last thing, of course, is that we see that Courtney is going to become the president of the United States, which if you're not born here in the country, you actually can't. You can't do that. Not naturalized citizen. This doesn't happen. But did you notice who he said she met?
Someone named Blinovich.
Blinovich of the Blinovich limitation effect, no doubt.
So I'm wondering if that was just the doctor again being wacky.
Okay. So let's
address the big one.
I guess let's address the big one here.
Holy God.
My first question is, and I did get a second impression when I watched it the second time.
Really? I did. Okay, more so intense.
Here's what I got the second time through. All right. For the listeners, obviously, spoilerific-y thing here is that the doctor discovers this is an egg, and then it's down to the four of them in the space station, Ludwig, Clara, the doctor, and Courtney to, you know, wow, it's going to be a baby. And then Lundvik says, well, how do we kill it then? The doctor then, after a little bit of moralizing about, oh, it's a little baby, basically buggers off and allows them, the humans, to decide the future of the human race. And Clara keeps asking the doctor, well, what happens? Does the moon go or does the moon not go? And the doctor's like, gray areas, I can't see everything, and, you know, who knows, but we've seen the moon in the future, haven't we? And, you know, might not have been the same moon, might have been a different, you know, hologram, special effects, who knows what it was. It doesn't necessarily mean
that doesn't mean anything. The future is not always set.
I can't always see the future. It's like this is the first time we've ever. And then later on, after the thing hatches, the doctor kind of does this mystic thing on the beach, and like now he pronounces the future of mankind. It's as if he's divining the future right there with some heretofore unknown Time Lord power.
Not first time. He did it in the Paul McGann movie.
Oh, right. I do kind of tend to forget that one, yes.
But it did happen. Yeah. And it's because he and the TARDIS are telepathically linked. So he can divine some sort of future from time to time. But when he was posed with that question, he could not, because the decision had not yet been made as to the fate of the moon.
That's what I got the first time. But the second time, it was obvious that he knew from the moment they got there. Or not from the moment they got there. When he bounced up out of the amniotic fluid, his exact line was, today's the day, humankind. He knew this was the day that mankind was going to take their steps to the stars.
Oh, I
he
didn't
knew
catch
it.
That. I missed that.
I got it on the second time. When he.
That's
when,
a good point.
When the shuttle falls down and then he hops up behind them and goes, today's the day, humankind. And he was all excited and he was bouncing. I mean, this was man. He is witnessing. This is it. This is the birth of mankind as the creature that's going to endure to the end of time. His favorite species that he's been watching all along. And he goes back and he's all happy and he's all excited until Ludwig says, how do we kill it? And then he turns and he is now like, okay, you have to make this decision. That was what triggered. Nothing to do with Clara whatsoever. Had entirely to do with Lundvik saying, how do we kill it? Because that's as soon as he started going, it's a baby and it's life and the thing. And then he started getting dismissive and walking away. So he knew what should have happened, but he took the step away from being the guy that pushed the button on that happening so that the humans being. So I don't think it was gray to him at all. I think he knew exactly what was supposed to happen because he's encountered humanity.
Which, and I would agree with that
so much.
I would agree with that, yes, because the dialogue that he and Clara have at the end in the TARDIS, I mean, when he says gray matter, something, you know, sometimes you just don't get it, you know, and I believed that he was not being serious.
He was lying. He was
being flippant.
Mm-hmm. And he was, you know, giving Clara. Now, of course, the disturbing part is that humanity chose unanimously to blow
Kill
the
it.
Thing up.
Yeah.
Now, do you really think that if Clara reaches out to everybody in the world and says, hey, turn on your lights or turn off the lights, do you really think that 100% of the people would turn off the lights?
I thought that was a little extreme, but again, I gave that bit a hand wave.
But then, when watching it the second time, I noticed, and obviously, you know, it has to do with the way they do the special effects, it went out in grids.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
Which means somebody was actually flipping the power at the power stations.
Instead of people turning off their own lights.
Right, so it could have been the government. It could have been the governments of the country said, kill the power. You know, we don't know who made that decision, but it's certainly not...
Yeah, I couldn't think of
it as being mankind all making the vote. And if it had been 51-49, how would Clara have figured out what the score was? It's like I'm not quite sure. Is that slightly more lights on or is that slightly more lights off? And what time is it in the United States versus what time is it in Europe?
Yeah, there are places that are not going to be having their lights on anyway. So it was a ridiculous
But she
thing.
Saw the important part of the world. She could see North America and Europe. So I mean the rest they don't need to be involved in this decision anyway. I mean, it's, I know, they're just ex-colonials.
Well, I think that actually reminded me of an old science fiction radio show that I heard years ago where people were communicating with the marooned astronauts through the use of lights. And I kind of wonder if the author of this story, maybe he didn't hear that and decided to try and implement that story element into what he was penning. So... And that's what I was immediately reminded of.
Mm-hmm.
So again, because this is Doctor Who being fantastical, which is when I love Doctor Who the most, I was able to let it go. Did it have any real good scientific merit to it? No. But it made for good dramatic storytelling.
I like the idea of them using the lights on the Earth as the
means of communication.
As the means. It's just, it just wasn't, you know, then... It's a good idea on the spur of a moment, which is what Clara was doing. But then if you get to thinking about it a little bit, you go, oh, no, wait a minute. This actually, there's some logistical issues here that we might need to work out.
Yeah, well, there's always logistical issues that, I mean, if you really want to dig deep into even the older Doctor Who episodes, there's always logistical issues where you're just going to take a step back and say, hang on, that won't work.
Okay, so now mankind turns the lights out. Mankind chooses the darkness instead of... So says the story. Clara and Courtney are the only two people that go against that and save humanity and turn humanity into the race that it will become, therefore making, once again, the freaking impossible girl to be the most important girl in the history of the human race. Whether or not anybody knows it or not, but pivotal and key. I don't know how that... Like I said, the author is clearly making an indictment against our navel-gazing and our lack of space. I mean, the only shuttle we had left, they cut off the tail and turned it into a ride for children.
Yeah.
It's pretty, you know, pretty harsh stuff and frankly, you know, fairly realistic.
He's
making a valid point.
Yeah.
But now he's making the point that all of mankind really doesn't deserve to go on. By turning out all the lights. Mankind turned away from it universally. There's no redeeming factor in man whatsoever, frankly, is what I get out of this. The whole planet are a bunch of selfish, scared, non-visionary people.
Well,
and
Doctor Who at times likes to deal in extremes. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
So is the Doctor right? Then they're all a bunch of puddinheads. Is his disdain for the human race right? And yet he seems they're quite his favorite species.
Sees their potential.
But it's here, it's Clara. Would he really have let that go off? Would the TARDIS have materialized? Because they didn't do it at 0 seconds. Would the TARDIS have materialized and stopped it? Or did he, when he popped out, he seemed to already know what had happened as if he was watching them.
He was clearly watching them. I don't know what if the doctor had a fallback plan. He didn't seem to indicate that he did. He just made the case that he had absolute faith in Clara that she would make the right decision.
And was that him trying to salvage that by sweet talking, or did he really mean it?
I think he meant it.
But Clara doesn't see that.
No, because Clara she's an idiot. She is a raving idiot, and she pisses me off in the worst way. The doctor allowed Clara to make the decision for the sake of humanity. This was the human race's decision, not his.
That's what he says. Yes.
The doctor will come in and he will save the human race when the human race is incapable of saving themselves. But here was a classic example where the human race had the power to not only save themselves, but to turn their gaze upward. this was their moment, as we've discussed already. He knew that he was letting them have it. It's like being the parent who is allowing the child to finally walk on his or her own. That's what he was doing when he allowed Clara to finally make the choice for the sake of humanity, and she decides to get all ugly about it. Oh, man, did that make me angry.
I know. It made my wife angry, too.
And I was furious.
Yes, the doctor wasn't very nice, but Clara deserved a swift kick in the rear.
She did.
She really did. But I'm going to cut her just a little set. Yeah, she should be upset. Not that upset or not that crazy upset as the way she is. But as I say, looking back at it, it's pretty clear that the doctor knew what this thing was and that it was going to hatch and that Earth was going to be fine. So actually, Earth wasn't in any danger at all. The only thing that was in danger was the little bitty baby. And it seems like he was actually going to let them kill the little bitty baby birdie chicky thingy in space. When in fact, if he did know, which it seems like he did know, he should have just said, don't nuke it, it'll be fine, nobody has to die. So he did actually put them in a situation where withholding intelligence could have caused them to make a horrible, horrible mistake. And so she has a right to be a little ticked off when...
I don't buy that. I'm sorry.
You know, that's withholding information. It's like, look... here, you have a choice. You're going to have to shoot this baby. Or if you don't shoot the baby, that house with a lot of people in it is going to blow up. And then when you finally decide that you're about to let the house blow up, the guy pops up and says, by the way, the house wasn't going to blow up. I was just kidding. You might have shot the baby for nothing. That is a little nasty.
I don't agree with that point because unlike fixed points of time, I think the doctor was correct earlier on when he said that there are fuzzy moments. Yes, he did recognize that this was the day humanity would wake up and stand up and, you know, whatever. But I think he also understood that this was the moment that humanity could turn its back. He saw the choices, and he knew that the only way that the only way humanity was really going to stand up and take its place in the stars, like he predicted at the end of the episode, is if they made that decision 100% on their own without him interfering.
Which, of course, they made the opposite decision.
They made the opposite decision, yes. But now think about it, though. The decision rested solely with Clara, Courtney, and Ludwig. Now, Ludwig can go back to Earth. She is on Earth now. And say, this is what happened. No, this basically, we did it. We made this decision. We defied you. Or at least these two people defied you. And really say, you know, they're humans. Your own people defied you, and look what happened. But instead, you know, if she were to come out and say this rather super intelligent and slightly or crazily eccentric space alien was the one who guided our hands the entire way, you know, that kind of, I don't know, that might take some of the manifest destiny kind of out of the argument.
Did they seem to be, for people who lived on an Earth that Lundvik herself said that she's been in space and that beyond that thin blue element, their envelope is nothing but death and darkness and
well, she took the same point of view,
right?
Yeah, she took. She did. Okay. She did say that, and it's. I think that's kind of like the similar point of view that she's echoing that everybody else on Earth has, which is why they stopped exploring space.
Didn't she take the fact that there were space alien spiders on the moon and the doctor claiming to be an alien from another planet in a whole lot of stride?
She did take it with a lot of stride.
For somebody who basically is saying that mankind doesn't believe there's anything going on out there, so therefore we let's carry that a step forward. Let's say she had blown up the creature. I guess if she'd blown up the creature, she'd be dead, so nobody would know there was a dead creature inside of it.
Yeah.
Except, of course, that Clara told everyone on the planet, so from now on, every time everyone looks up the moon, they might be thinking, you know, there was a space alien in there, and so therefore there are space aliens, and so there is stuff out there. So we can still turn our attention to the skies and look up and go
but
on.
Then, but they would do so with contempt. There's a possibility that they would look and see the remnants of that blown up moon and think there was something in there that was going to kill us. We have no business being out there.
Perhaps.
This is all supposition.
Oh, yeah.
There's no real clear story guideline here to tell us which way the people were thinking one way or the other. I mean, we could debate this, you know, till hell froze over. But there is the possibility, like I said, that they viewed the moon as a threat and therefore blowing it up eliminated that threat. We have no business being in space. Thank you very much. I'm going to continue contemplating my navel.
I guess perhaps. I mean.
But then when they saw what happened, they saw, yes, the moon did hatch. The shell evaporated and they saw this beautiful thing, this elegant butterfly type thing just kind of, you know, fly off into space and kind of create this sense of, oh my God, we're all alive. Oh my God, we have a new moon. We're going to be okay. And there was something really wonderful out there. Maybe our initial decision was wrong.
Yeah.
That was what I was getting out of this.
I think that's what they were going for. I'm just, again, it was one of those things like there are people, or I'd like to think there are people. But again, I'd like to think that given that question to mankind, not 100% of the lights would go out. You know, somewhere, somebody's porch light must have been left behind.
Oh, I'm sure there was, because somebody just wasn't paying attention.
There would be that, too.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? I'd like to think that there was a mixture of people and that we weren't, as a species, as a whole,
that callous?
That callous in our attempt. And so there are people, we know that there are people, that even knowing that there's a dead space alien out there, that would inspire them to go to find out about it, to learn more about the spiders, to do whatever it is, because, you know, there's that aspect of humanity has not been wiped away in this kind of bleak view of humanity.
It is a rather bleak view. In fact, I remember when I was watching it the first time, when the decision, or when Clara offers the decision to all of humanity on Earth and presents them the options as to how to express that, I remember I turned to Keith and I said, you know, and this is the cynical side of me. I was like, you know, I would not be the least bit surprised if all of humanity decided that their survival instinct, you know, that lizard part of the brain was going to kick in. And they're all going to say, you know, well, if it's either us or it, I choose us.
Which would you have chosen? Some crazy lady came over the TV and the Earth being pummeled by massive tides and cities wiped out because of something wrong with the moon.
To be honest, at that point, I think I would have gone with the unknown. And I mean, and this is really me. I actually would have opted for saving the alien because, let's consider my options here. I mean, the Earth is being just torn apart anyway through tidal shift as it is. So if we blow up the moon, we're going to get pelted by moon debris.
The initial plan to blow up the moon, but I mean the latter plan, I think I got pretty clear that meant it would kill the creature.
No, but I'm just going, I know, but intact. I'm approaching this purely from a logical point of view.
If I were hearing this, Clara's choice that she gave them.
I mean, if I were to hear this and if, you know, given the choices, I'm simply saying what I would be thinking. And my thought would be, well, we're all screwed no matter how we slice this. So why kill the innocent creature in the process? Let it live.
I'm going to say that and of course we didn't hear what Clara explained to everybody. So we have no idea what actual choice she told them. But at the moment that she was explaining it to her, my understanding of her understanding was that the creature hatches and we don't know what happens. Or we irradiate the creature and kill it where it lies, and the moon settles back down and remains a corpse in orbit for the rest of time. I think if that's the way she described it, I'd have probably turned the lights out too. I think I couldn't make a different decision if I were weighing, for example, the potential death of my kids. It's a creature. We don't know that it's an intelligent creature. It's probably just a chicken because it's just in an egg. Would you kill a cow if you thought it could save the world? Yeah, kind of maybe. I think I could kill a cow. Where down the line, it would be a tough choice, but it wouldn't be one I'd want to make in 30 minutes.
On
the face of it. And I'd really like more information than Clara could possibly have. And, maybe have a one or two independent people come back and say, yeah, actually that's, what's really happening. And that's not just some crazy lady on the pirate TV station that's hacked into our signals, or anything like that. So, I don't know, but it's, I recognize that is taking the bleak angle of it, but at the same time, I'm just trying to be honest here.
Maybe the argument is sound how everybody else would then turn off their
but
lights.
It wouldn't be everyone, just for the same reason that, for example, some people don't eat meat. It's like, oh, but the little animals. It's like those people are not going to turn off their lights. They'll live a horrible, miserable life without the taste of meat, and self-sacrifice themselves just for the little baby animals. I enjoy a good steak. Sorry, a cow's, got big brown, cute eyes and is kind of sad, but when it comes to dinner time. So that could be part of the attitude too. I don't know. So Clara totally overreacting, that much. Ooh. I agree. Another thing is I didn't like when she was at first when the doctor jumped into the amniotic fluid and the Ludwig said to her, is he coming back? And she goes, well, I guess if he says he's coming back, he's coming back. Prior to deep breath, if he says he's coming back, he's coming back.
Yeah.
100% faith in him.
She's totally lost complete faith in him since the regeneration.
And okay, so then when he goes away to leave them to the choice, she says, I think he's pretty much left it to us, which means he's not coming back, or at least in her mind, he's not coming back. So now completely lost, mostly lost it, but now completely lost it. But now here's my point. What has he done since his regeneration that hasn't actually proven to her that he still has her back at every turn?
I can't think of a thing.
Because he has. Even when we had that abandonment thing in deep breath where she thought he'd dumped her, he hadn't. And in fact, she was standing there going, now what was it I know that because the doctor will always have my back. And
he
she reaches back and sure enough,
there he is.
He had her back. And he has been dour and he's been insulting, but he has not in
he's
any
never
way
really abandoned
really
her.
Abandoned her. So I don't buy this that she thinks actually that he would do it.
Is she upset because of that, or is it because he forced her to make the decision?
Yes. And of course, the fact that she thinks he's playing some sort of game with them is an interesting mindset. I mean, he is. He is the king of the heap, and the humans are just ants beneath his feet.
But he doesn't necessarily view them that way. He sees what they're capable of. We see that in the way he relates to Clara.
But she's beginning to feel...
Oh, she feels it.
Inferior to him. I think that's what it is. I think this is, before the doctor was a very clever guy, but they were pally-wally, and now he is more aloof, more distant, and more insulting of their intelligence. And she's not feeling as special or as smart as she once
And again,
was.
We're talking about the impossible girl who has known the doctor or has had theoretically interacted with every incarnation of the doctor. So for her to all of a sudden behave this way again speaks some pretty big volumes of inconsistency in her character. And again, I found her total attitude towards what has happened here and what the doctor has done as completely, totally inappropriate. I mean, when she made the comment about how she wanted to slap him, a new regeneration, I mean, I was actually offended by that.
That is a funny line. Actually, that was kind of a funny line.
Oh,
I could sort of picture hitting him so hard that the face changed, like it did there from the Smith to Capaldi regeneration. You get a good face smack and sort of, and it's a different face. But anyway, she was totally out of line. However, again, just to play the devil's advocate, we don't all think in lockstep with one another, and some people are driven by different emotions and thought paths, and that's why couples do get into arguments and misunderstandings, because what one person thinks is perfectly logical and reasonable, the other doesn't see it that way. And obviously we don't see Clara's reaction as being logical, appropriate, or anything of that nature.
And you know why? Because of everything that she's gone through since she started traveling with the doctor.
You'd think, but again, it's just, it's like, yeah, but then this falls under that irreconcilable differences kind of thing. It's like, you know something? We actually just don't get each other. I don't get Clara, and obviously Clara and I would not make a good pairing because I don't get her.
I don't get her at all.
And whereas she's cute and perky and was relatively useful, can be very useful to the doctor's companion from time to time, her manipulative, compulsive, control freak personality just doesn't fly. Now, so she goes, and I want to point something else about her frankly nasty personality. She goes back to Coal Hill School. Danny comes along, and as we were telegraphed with a big sledgehammer last week, oh, it's happened, hasn't he? He's pushed you too far, hasn't he? And she's like, and he gives her this, you know, well, that's why I quit the army and stuff. And then what does she say? Here we have this moment where she's comforting in his arms. He's sympathizing with her. And she says, when did you get so smart?
I had a bad day.
Yeah. Okay. When did you get so smart?
When did you get
smart?
To be so smart?
Dummy.
Yeah.
See, the unspoken word there is, you've been a bit of a stupid head all along. Yeah. How did you get so smart now?
Yeah. I'm gonna.
Do you realize you are just absolutely an obnoxious woman?
She really is. But I'm gonna let that one slide because I hear that phrase used a lot in passing, and a lot of people say it without fully realizing what it means.
Clara says a lot of things without fully realizing what it means.
Yeah, but again, how do you get to be so smart is one of those things that I've heard a lot. Sometimes applied to me
or something like that.
How do you suddenly become so smart?
Yeah, that was it. So in other words, it's like up till this point, you haven't been smart.
Well,
it's different when you say, you know, when somebody gives you wise advice, you say, how did you get so smart? That doesn't mean I didn't realize you were smart until just now. It means, you know, there's another example that you were smart and you're a wise person and I value your judgment. But in this case, it came off as if I've never valued your judgment up until this very moment. And now suddenly I'm surprised that you actually can think.
And here's where I'm going to now give Clara I'm going to cut her some slack, because again, I've heard people say that not fully realizing what it is that they were saying, not fully comprehending that by saying, when did you suddenly become so smart? You are thereby inferring that prior to this moment, you were a raving idiot.
Which, of course, we know Danny was.
Well, true. But a lot of people, I have heard many people say that without fully realizing the full depth of that statement. So because I've heard other people say it and not fully understand what it is that they meant, I'm going to cut Clara some slack here and say she was doing the same thing. She was not giving some sort of a backhanded compliment to Danny. She was just saying something without fully understanding that there's an equally negative side to that. That's the only area that I'm going to cut her slack on.
So
everything else in the last part of this episode, she gets no slack in my opinion. She was an idiot.
Do you think that his sage advice about, well, you're not done with him until you can get over your anger, so just wait till you're calm and then break up with him, you think that's actually not very good advice? Because I don't think once you've calmed down, that doesn't mean the person can't get you angry again.
Yeah.
If you're not done with them. So that was kind of,
I think he was simply trying to say, don't make a reactionary decision.
We had a discussion a while back. I don't remember whether it was in the last episode or the episode before, where I was thinking out loud that this series as a whole may be being considered as one story, and that at some point the Doctor was going to hit the crisis along the way that would be the turning point towards making him the crotchety but doctorly figure that we sort of expected. Was this it?
It could be. It's very possible. We won't know until we see the next episode. And interestingly enough, in the trailer, there was no Clara.
I think, and this is, again, no reading ahead or anything like that, I'm going to take a guess here that we've now hit the Doctor companion-like or companion episodes. So we're going to have a Doctor-heavy episode with no companion, although it's got that comedian guy that's guest starring in it. Frank something, I think. So we're going to have that one while they take a break. And then we're going to have an episode that probably doesn't have much Doctor in it, but has a lot of Clara in it. And given that scenario, if that is true, we can expect an episode in which Clara comes up against an alien menace on her own, maybe with Danny, and ultimately, of course, has to call in the Doctor and reconcile with him, too, towards the end to get this done. But that's my prediction of how they're going to cheap out on two episodes, because they like to do that in the past, and perhaps bring the Doctor into alignment. So, like, you know, right? I'm sorry, Clara, I did that, and I was rotten. And she's, oh, I'm sorry, Doctor, I didn't really...
Well, if he has to apologize, I'm actually going to be upset. I mean, was he harsh? Yeah, but I didn't feel that what he did was entirely out of line.
But sometimes you have to apologize.
Even when you're not wrong?
Well, you know, let's face it. We see an awful lot of politicians and companies and people doing what's now called the passive-aggressive apology. I am so sorry if anyone was offended by my remarks. That does not mean...
That's not an apology.
That's not an apology, right? I mean, it's a... I'm sorry I got caught or whatever. It's not.
It's more like, please forgive me for being a jackass.
But I don't necessarily believe that that is meant to be in your mind a get out of jail free card. It's like, I'm not really sorry for what I did, but I'm sorry that you didn't like what I did.
I'm sorry you caught me at it.
It's more of a, I sometimes, not always, sometimes I take it as like, I didn't mean to offend you. I didn't realize I would offend you. I'm sorry that it offended you.
I'm sorry you were upset.
It can come out. It's like that. It's like, as you say, you can say it in such a way that, and now it's kind of gotten into the cultural establishment. Anytime anyone ever says that, you go, oh, well, that's a non-apology. It's like, but I don't think all of them were meant to be non-apologies. And sometimes when you get in a fight with someone and, you know, usually you don't think you're wrong. I never think I'm wrong, even after I'm done with a fight, because I wouldn't be fighting if I didn't think I was right in the first place. But sometimes you have to say, look, I'm sorry we were fighting. I'm sorry I couldn't understand what you were trying to say. I'm sorry that I didn't realize what my actions would be, the effect they would have on you, etc. And I think the Doctor can do that. He can say, sorry, I was doing this with the best of intentions, and I never occurred to me that it would cause you to react in this way, and I would never want you to react in this way to me. So I can see the Doctor apologize, and I can see the Doctor a little bit mend his ways, because he's really brutal to her at times. I mean, particularly in the ones where Moffat's writing him. I mean, some of the things that he says about her weight and her age and her appearance. Yeah. I mean, we think it's good-natured ribbing, but I think I tweeted it or reposted it to Facebook, and I don't know whether it's true or apocryphal. But, you know, there are children out there that are kind of like, would the Doctor like me anymore if I gained weight? And that's a fair criticism. All right. I mean, you learn what you see. And now the Doctor is kind of nasty and insulting to his best friend. And if you don't see it as playful or you don't interpret it that way, there's a fine line. And I think it's been tread over more than a bit this year with his Doctor. It's like close to the mark where I'd like to see it, but it's just over that line. And I'm hoping that this will be the step that pulls him back over the line and remembers that he does need to have a little compassion.
You know, and that's okay. I don't have a problem with him kind of wising up. I mean, we've made that comparison to William Hartnell, how in the beginning he was a very unpleasant Time Lord, but over the course of a couple of seasons, he became much beloved.
A beloved grandfather, that's
a
right.
Very beloved grandfather character, grandfatherly type character to obviously to Susan, but also towards Barbara and Ian, and then subsequent companions. So we could see this being the change. It would work. It would be okay if we saw the Doctor kind of soften a little bit. But at the same time, I don't know, the thought of him having to apologize would sort of imply to me that he was wrong in his decision to let them make the choice.
Maybe he should have let them make the choice, but done it in a different way. I mean, I don't know what that different way would be.
Yeah, I can't think of what that different way would be.
No, but then I'm not a 2,000-year-old Time Lord that should be relatively savvy in the way of the universe at this stage of the game. But...
Well, all I know is that Clara she stormed off the TARDIS in a huff, she complained to Danny, she ran home, and is staring at the moon, and there's no Doctor, there's no TARDIS there. We don't see any Clara in the next episode, and all I have to say is, you know, and I think you're right, I think the way the pairings go with Doctor Heavy, Companion Light, Companion Heavy, Doctor Light kind of thing, I think you're right, I think that is going to happen. However... if this was Clara's farewell, nothing would make me happier. Because I am, as much as she went on to say, I am done with the Doctor, you know what? I'm done with her.
I agree. It would be a terrible way for a companion to depart, but I'm done with her. I agree. I would like to see her gone. So if Clara's leaving, we know she's in through the Christmas special. Hopefully they've got something new in mind for the Doctor.
Oh, I certainly hope so, because this dynamic here is just not working for me. It takes away from the fun stories that we used to get.
If we don't soften the Doctor, though, I don't know what companion pairing would work. I can't think of a single companion that the Doctor has had over the years that could function with this Doctor except for Romana. She could have put him in his place, but...
Well, if we're going with televised companions, yes. However, if we're going to go into the expanded universe, there's one in the Big Finish stories.
Evelyn Smythe?
Yes.
I like Evelyn Smythe.
I love Evelyn Smythe. May that actress rest in peace. She's gone now. But I loved Evelyn Smythe.
She worked very well with Colin Baker's Doctor. Yeah. And I think that's probably what you're drawing on, is that there's some similarities between the barbed nature of the Doctors that an older companion could...
Exactly. A younger companion may not be able to put up with it, but an older companion, and when you mention Romana, I'm thinking Mary Tam.
Oh,
Romana,
yeah.
Romana 1.
Whenever I mention Romana, I'm always talking about Mary Tam. Sorry, Lala. Mary Tam is the original and the model.
And she had the backbone to give the Doctor a bit of a smackdown here and there. Well, not smackdown, but a little bit of ego humbling, shall we say.
Yeah, I mean, the second Romana had adapted to Tom Baker's Doctor, she was still strong and she was still smart and very, very useful as a companion for the most part. But yeah, the imperiousness of the first Romana.
But you need someone that kind, you need a female that strong who can actually stand up to the Doctor and say, sorry, no.
Do you think,
that, and that's assuming if the Doctor doesn't change, yes.
Do you think that there's a... I just got this, which is sad, because if it's true, then they failed miserably. The reason I think Romana could stand up to him is because she is more on his level. And of course, she has that imperious nature to her. I think probably the reason that Evelyn Smythe stood up so well to Colin Baker's Doctor, well, in addition to Colin Baker's Doctor in Big Finish, is mellowing out anyway.
Yeah, a little. Yeah.
Is because she's older, and that lends her that comparative sort of, even though the Doctor is technically much, much older, there is still that sort of dynamic between old and young. Are we also seeing that here between Clara and the Doctor, whereas previously she was on equal footing, now she is not on equal footing with him because
I agree.
Boy, are they doing it badly.
I agree completely. And yeah, I guess I came up with that same conclusion. And I remember reading while we were having these conversations, you know, this discussion, I remember reading interviews and articles with Grand Moff saying how, yeah, the personality, you know, the dynamic's going to change. I mean, it's not going to be quite so buddy buddy like it was. But there was still the implication that it was going to be rather positive, different, but still kind of positive. And I'm not getting any of that. I'm getting something that is, oh, geez, I don't know what kind of term to put to it. But I agree with you. I don't think it's being handled very well here. That yeah. Maybe because Clara is such the young companion, and even though the Doctor is, you know, forever been thousands and thousands, you know,
maybe that's what's putting her. Old. Maybe that's what's putting her in her stupid mode. Is she, you know, her compulsive need to be in charge. She's just been knocked down a peg. I mean, whether or not it's intentional or not, she just feels okay, like her she. You know, it's like now the schoolmaster is talking to me instead of another teacher kind of thing.
So are we saying that she's pissed off at the end of this episode because she's got this compulsive need to be in charge, but instead of wrestling it from the Doctor and then finally getting her way through some sort of passive-aggressive behavior, he just surrenders it to her?
No. I'm just saying that, you know, Clara's behavior towards the Doctor has been consistently different along the way. And I'm wondering if that is meant to be a deficiency in her character because she is no longer in as much control in the relationship. And that's because she feels somewhat younger and inferior.
And yet possibly, no, that's possible because she has, we've seen throughout the episode so far, she's tried to retain some level of control, especially with Into the Dalek.
Mm-hmm.
We saw a lot of that, how she was desperately trying to guide the Doctor into thinking differently about this one, about the Daleks in general. So yeah, maybe there's some carryover, and maybe she felt because Matt Smith's, you know, the previous Doctor, even though he was still infinitely older than she was, he had, you know, that boyish young personality, so that she was able to approach him on more equal footing.
Yeah, so I if that's what it is, I think maybe they need to, I hate to say this, but I think maybe they need to spell that out a little bit better. Because, I mean, we're either making this up, or I'm making this up whole cloth, or it's there and I'm having to stretch real hard to get it, which means it's not.
It's not being done very well then.
Yeah, it's not obvious anyway. I don't have anything else.
No.
Concerning this episode. Like I said, even though we've spent some time picking on it, it's really, it was an entertaining episode and by far one of the better ones this year.
Mm-hmm.
So in that respect, it didn't lose that on second going. I'm a bit annoyed with it being the science, just feeling like they're intentionally trying to flick my nose with bad science throughout the course of the story. But
I've seen worse.
I'm sure I've seen worse. It's just, no, maybe I haven't seen worse because, like I said, there's still that whole thing. If they had just not said any, if they'd put spiders on the moon, we'd have all been going, well, how could the spiders breathe? What do the spiders eat? What are the things? And we'd all be doing that. But it's not like, well, there's spiders on the moon. They're actually not spiders. They're actually single cell life cellular organisms. Like, really, you've just taken that to a whole nother level of why did you do that?
True.
And so in that way, it is almost like he's daring me to have a podcast where we pick on the bad science. Literally, I think I could imagine some writer doing that, sitting back and I was like, I'll give him something to talk about.
So
Mr. Harness, if you are listening and you wrote this episode just so that we on Fusion Patrol would pick on your science,
you succeeded
and drop us some audio feedback and we'll play it on the air probably.
Wishful thinking.
Perhaps. You got nothing else?
I got nothing else.
Nothing else. All right.
Oh, well, no, wait. Well, yes, I got one tiny thing. Polka dotted shirt.
That was weird, wasn't it? That was a little bit weird.
Yeah, that was a little, I mean, it still kind of worked, but I'm
glad he's not wearing a tie.
Oh, I know. That would just ruin it.
But I really
I, I like how we started off with something that was a tiny bit eccentric, but still understated, but we're kind of ratcheting up the game a little bit with the shirts being just a little bit more outlandish. I mean, I'm kind of wondering if by the end of his tenure, he's going to be wearing something that he'll still have
question
the same
marks.
Well, no, but maybe. But I was thinking of the jacket and the pants and the shoes still be the same, but the shirt be totally psychedelic.
I'm thinking that actually, in a way, let's talk costume for a second. Christopher Eccleston wasn't really around long enough. I mean, he had a costume and that was it. As far as I know, there was no variation in it the entire time he was the Doctor.
No.
David Tennant had two suits, brown and blue.
Yeah.
And I couldn't tell you whether he was wearing the same tie all the time or not.
I don't know. I don't remember.
There was really no, but you know.
The tie never stood out.
Tom Baker had three outfits in his time, generally speaking.
Generally three to four, but yeah.
And Pertwee changed his smoking jacket. Matt Smith changed bow ties and then eventually changed costume entirely.
Yeah.
To go with the thing.
Something a bit more Victorian.
I kind of like the fact that that his costume stays the same, but that they've given him the opportunity to just completely change shirts and put on anything he wants.
Oh, I like it. But it just kind of really stood out in a rather sort of humorous way. It was something that I just easily noticed and I had to make note of it.
What I didn't like about it was that it was mostly black.
I know. It would have been
so
nice.
So it's black underneath a black coat. It would have been better if that had been a different color and polka dots, because then it would have stood out.
It popped. Well,
yeah.
Hey, give it time. If this is an evolution, if this is something that's going to be progressing and growing in the episodes to come, well, clearly you don't want to go too far too fast. It's just enough that he's got the polka dots.
Yeah, he's got different shirts. So hopefully we'll see an homage to some of the older Doctors.
I like the idea of the question mark. That'd be far out.
Just wear that one day and then be gone just as a throw. Maybe in the Christmas special.
Yeah, it could work.
I can get away with it. Well, Ben, thank you for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure.
And listeners, we hope you'll join us all again next time when we should be reviewing Mummy on the Orient Express. Good night.
Cheers.
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us, leave us a review on iTunes, or stop by and visit at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, search for Fusion Patrol, or just drop us a note at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf.
Oh, see, my notes are filled with pick on things. How does an egg gain mass? Never mind.
It doesn't.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It doesn't.
It does not gain mass. The mass is constant. It just changes. That's all.